Hello, and welcome to Cool People Who Did Cool Stuff, your podcast. Did I do the wrong one? Should we keep it? Should we keep in that?
I love you so much.
Hello, and welcome to Live Like the World is Dying, the other podcast that I'm one of the three hosts of. I'm Margaret Kiljoy, and with me is...
Brooke, hi.
And Inman, who can't tell if this was a bit or not.
Let's pretend it was a bit. I have a functional memory. I'm not on podcast recording number 5 for the week. I don't know what you're talking about. And this is Live Like the World is Dying, your podcast for what feels like the end times. And welcome back. We have been on a break because we were all a little burned out and we wanted to catch up because we didn't want to. We thought through our options. We could either have gone off a weekly schedule, but we were like, well, we like having a weekly schedule. So instead we took a break. And I don't remember whether we told you about that break, but it's over. Don't worry. It'll totally happen again. And whatever, you like watching TV shows that have season breaks, you can listen. I'm sure you all figure it out. Anyway, it's this month in the apocalypse. Only this time we're going to be a little bit messy because it's been a little bit. So it's like a this month and a half in the apocalypse. So you get an extra, it's like 1.5 as much apocalypse as usual. Y'all are so lucky. But first, this podcast is a proud member of the Channel Zero Network of Anarchist Podcasts, and here's a jingle from another show on the network. Da-da-da-da-da-da.
I'm going to make those pompous academics regret kicking out such a genius. Deciding to build my lab and do my research.
The Time Talks Podcast.
Have you ever stared at a 500-page book and wish you could just talk to the author about their ideas instead? If so, the Time Talks Podcast, part of the Channel Zero Network, is for you, where we discuss history, politics, music, and art with an anti-authoritarian and anarchist perspective.
The Time Talks Podcast.
What's this light? I feel different.
The Time Talks Podcast.
Okay. So,
you know, it just occurs to me that if we're doing half of March, we're at some point going to have to do half of March. So we're either going to have half a month in the apocalypse or do March, half of March and April, and then it'll be another month and a half. So maybe we should call this 45 days in the apocalypse. I'm just saying.
I'll just continue to messily not exactly keep track of, oh, that happened on this date instead of this date, so it can't come in. But I'm open to it. I can be convinced. So... I want to talk about some stuff. One of the things I want to talk about is how I would never say Boeing assassinated a man, but I would sure say that everyone who pays attention to the following news story comes to the inevitable conclusion that the private company Boeing, which manufactures an awful lot of the planes in this country, which has been having a lot of problems lately, a lot of people think they assassinated a man. There was a man named John Barnett. He was a Boeing whistleblower, and he was found dead on March 10th. And the news can't say, quote, he was assassinated. So instead, they're dancing around it, doing things like putting self-inflicted in quotes when they talk about the gunshot wound that this man had to his head. I honestly, like, this one... It's like one of those things where it like didn't surprise me, but it was still surprised me. I don't know how to describe this. It's a very common feeling these days where like something absolutely horrible happens that where you're like, of course that happened, but you're still a little bit like, I can't believe that happened. Mm-hmm. John Barnett was a quality control manager at a Boeing plant in South Carolina. He worked on the 787 Dreamliners, and he had been pretty upset about a lot of the quality control that was going on. There's been a lot of conversation recently about Boeing and its lack of quality control because their planes are literally falling apart in the air. And of course, there was like two crashes a couple years ago that killed hundreds of people that had to do with some faulty technology that caused the planes to go into nosedives. That
and
the
John
pilots
Oliver
couldn't
just
correct.
A longer piece on Boeing too, so that brought it out in conversations.
Yeah. Well, and then the main thing that brought it up, I think, is that the in the U.S. it actually happened to U.S. people, so people noticed an airplane had a plug in the side of the plane blow out, and it was before it had gotten up to cruising altitude, and it would have gone a lot worse if it had happened a little bit later. Fortunately, no one was seriously injured and the plane was able to land. And from there, it's just been, yeah, this cascading thing. I really recommend that John Oliver, The Last Week Tonight, about Boeing and what's been going on with the planes. Anyway, John Barnett, quality control manager, and he was in Charleston to give a deposition against Boeing because he was suing them for retaliation because of his whistleblowing. And then they were like, hey, how come he didn't show up in court? And so they went to his hotel and they found him dead in his pickup truck of a quote unquote self-inflicted gunshot wound. He was 62 years old. And yikes. Rest in peace. And I have yet to meet anyone who has heard this news and not been like, yep, Boeing killed a man.
Sure, yeah, seems like it.
That's what reasonable people would come to the conclusion of, because it's what's happened in the past.
Yeah. And it, you know, I mean, there's also, sure, there's technically a version of the world where he was like, I'm just so sad about, no, he was, whatever. Anyway. Okay, so then I'm going to talk about environmental news.
Okay, do that.
Don't worry, it's worse.
Oh, no.
So, let's see. This was the warmest February in Earth's history. This is the ninth month in a row that we have been in the warmest of this following month on record. The time we beat this time for February warmest was 2016, was the previous warmest month in February in history. And charts are literally being recalibrated to show the excessive heat. If you look at a lot of these charts, like the lines from this year don't even touch previous years, you know?
Yikes.
There's the warmest winter on record in the United States. This month, the average global sea surface temperature was the highest it has ever been in the recorded history of the Earth for any month at all. The average global sea surface temperature was 69.96 degrees Fahrenheit. And we are very likely to have a very active hurricane season this year in the Atlantic because of the fact that we actually might not have a hotter year this year than last year because the I get El Nino and La Nina mixed up. But overall, we've been I'm pretty sure it's like El Nino is the thing we've been in and it's the thing that makes it warmer. La Nina is the like cools things down a little bit. And so that's like cool, right? We're like, oh, hooray, we could definitely use some cooling things down a little bit. However, people have guessed is the wrong word. Scientists who study this shit have looked and been like, you know, or climatologists have looked and been like, well, this slight cooling coming at this particular way that all of this heat is working, we are very likely to have a very active hurricane season.
Do you know when that starts?
No.
I don't live in hurricane zone, so I know it's, you know, always summer and early fall. It's crazy, active, yeah, busy. It's the worst of it. But I feel like I don't know when that season, quote unquote, starts.
I can't remember. I don't live in that area anymore. But speaking of seasons not being what they used to be, there was a study that showed that it's not just in your head. Spring is indeed on average 13 days earlier in the United States than it was in 1981. There's a chart up. You can look at Washington Post, actually. It's a pretty good article about it that shows it's kind of a U shape of the country is having like way earlier springs, whereas some parts of the upper Midwest are a little bit later springs than usual, although not this year. But and especially on mountain ranges, spring is remarkably earlier, which made sense as I was walking my dog today in the middle of March and looking at the flowers blooming and thinking to myself, ah, yes, April showers will bring those flowers to me in May.
It's early.
Yeah. So that's just not in your head. It's a thing that's happening. Texas saw incredibly destructive wildfire in the past month or so.
Yeah.
Is the most destructive in Texas history as the smoke House Creek fire. It burned more than 1 million acres. And Texas is primed for more fires. That fire came earlier than the usual fire season, which is March and April in the panhandle of Texas. It's a lot of basically like dry grasses. And there's like specifically ways where it's like when it comes out of freezing, it is more primed for these fires. I think the way that the grass breaks or something in the freezing. And so that is part of why the, you know, obviously it's like things are getting warmer on average, but we're also seeing all these crazy weird cold spikes, you know? And this fire killed at least 3,600 animals. I believe that it means cows in this case. And the fire was started by power lines. However, it's unlikely to affect your beef prices this year. So don't worry. However, the meat that you will have trouble getting this year for a reasonable price is crawfish. The crawfish population is dropping rapidly in Louisiana, and it's fucking up the harvest like wildly. I actually care more about the ecosystem than the harvest of crawfish personally, but I also recognize the importance of crawfish to traditional dishes and things like that in, you know, in Louisiana. A combination of drought, heat, and saltwater intrusion up the Mississippi and followed by a hard freeze has fucked up the harvest enormously. It's an estimated $140 million in losses. And crawfish meat has gone from $3 to $5 a pound to $10 to $12 a pound. The and a critically endangered fish called the small-tooth sawfish has been washing up dead in Florida. And it's funny because it's like, there's, it's like 30 or something, or like 20 or 30 of them have washed up. But this is a very endangered fish. So like when one of them washes up, it's a big deal. Okay. And scientists are trying to figure it out, and they're ruling out all of these different, you know, bacterial, et cetera, causes. But these sort of like fish going crazy and then dying is a thing that is happening. We've talked about it more on the show before. I think Inman talked about it. Almost positive environmental news. There is a plan in place from the Biden administration to limit drilling and cattle grazing on a fuck ton of BLM land. And as a part of a plan to save the greater sage grouse, adding restrictions to 67 million acres on drilling restrictions to about 67 million acres across 10 states. And this seems really good. And it is really good. It is what actually happened. Obama passed a law limiting a bunch of drilling. And then Trump was like, nah, we don't need that. Drill, baby, drill. That's a slogan from the 80s. And so that got reversed. So Biden is like, well, what if I half reverse it?
So reinstating some of it.
Yeah, bringing back some of the – it's not as strong of a bill as the Biden administration did, which just sort of shows the like constant rightward drift of American politics. And
as soon as you said that Biden administration passed a bill, I was like, there's a caveat coming, coming to this. Yeah, and I was also like, I wonder if someone else is the president next, are they just going to undo the whole thing?
Well, considering that the next president will almost certainly be Trump, I continue to hold by my theory that the next president will be Donald Trump unless Donald Trump or Biden dies a natural death. If any of them die an well, obviously, if Trump dies an unnatural death, he won't be the next president. But if Biden dies an unnatural death, then Trump is the next president. And if – anyway. Whereas if anyone else runs – this is my theory. Okay, anyway. So in a sort of actually positive – well, I guess we're going to save all the positive stuff for the end. I'll save this positive thing for the end. That's my environmental news. And the one other thing that I wanted to talk about before I pass it off is I want to just sort of – I suspect that a lot of people already have been following what happened when an anarchist and active duty service personnel person named Aaron Bushnell killed himself by setting himself on fire while saying Free Palestine. I think that's something that people are already aware of, and so I don't want to go into it too much, but I just feel like that is a thing that needs to be on our mind. It happened on February 25th this year. And I don't know, never let them say that you curse the darkness instead of lighting a candle, Aaron Bushnell. Oh, Inman, what do you got?
Only happy things.
You're lying.
I'm lying. It's not happy things. You know, it's like to kind of put in perspective, I mean, this is a perspective that we I'm I'm sure all of our listeners already have, about just the severity of like what is happening in Gaza. This is not a new thing, but it is a thing that is taking particular note right now. In Gaza, we had something that people are calling the flower massacre in the last like month or two. And the flower massacre occurred when an aid convoy was announced in Gaza City. And so, you know, thousands of people showed up to receive food, receive aid, and Israeli forces used it as an opportunity to kill 118 people. Literally just shot into the crowd as people were like scrambling to get flour, bread, you know, basic stuff to stay alive. And these are people who have been experiencing like very long periods of malnutrition because Israel is cut off most aid from coming into Gaza. And these are like super basic things that are keeping people alive. Since then, there have been another string like this big one happened. And then it's been a repeated tactic by Israel, like over the last like month or two, is attacking aid convoys or using aid convoys as like a way to gather and then attack a lot of people all at once. People who think that they're showing up to receive food and instead are getting killed. I think as of like right now, there like a couple days ago, there was another instance of this where like 21 people were killed who had shown up to like a supply convoy, and like another like 150 or so were injured. And to make things worse, I have a story kind of about it's three very different but similar stories about three teens who died in the last like month or so. And the first one is connected to Palestine as well. We have Rami Al-Halhouli, who is a 12-year-old Palestinian boy who was killed by Israeli border guards in the Shuafat refugee camp in East Jerusalem on the third night of Ramadan. Rami was out in the street playing with fireworks with his friends, and they were just shooting fireworks up into the sky, and a Israeli like border guard or whatever the fuck they're calling them shot Rami like three or four times. And the way that one of the disturbing things about this is the way that it's being talked about in, you know, some media sources and especially by Israel, is that if you read the Israeli reports, you might imagine a night of rioting. You might imagine a wall of people encroaching upon the border guards, whatever they're called. And you might imagine people throwing Molotov cocktails at lines of soldiers, and you might imagine Rami standing out in front of them shooting a bottle rocket at the border guards. This is the media narrative that Israel and, you know, conservative news sources want people to believe. In actuality, there's video footage leading up to Rami getting shot. And it shows like three or four kids playing in a vacant street. And next to them, you see like 100 feet away or something, you see the giant border wall and you see watchtowers in the distance. You see a line of parked cars and you see no people in sight. And that is the scene that we have for Rami and his friends playing with fireworks on the third night of Ramadan. And Israeli forces just rolling up and shooting him for playing with fireworks. And so there, it's like there, you know, there's all these, this media narrative build of there were riots, there were disturbances, as they're being called. But there's no proof of any of that happening. And there's literal video footage showing like a few kids playing on a secluded street with fireworks. One of the like security prime ministers of Israel was then kind of like, people were like following him around, being like, yo, what the fuck? Like what happened? And there's all this video footage of him like congratulating the soldiers who shot Rami. And he eventually makes a statement where he condemns the child as a terrorist and praises his soldiers, who he's calling like warriors, for killing a terrorist. Basically being like, you know, calling for the extermination of an entire people based on this like myth of terrorism. And it's just supremely fucked up. I had a quote prepared for like something that this prime minister, whose name I can't remember or find and I truly hope is lost to time and that no one remembers him ever, and I'm not gonna say it because it's just too fucked up, and we can all kind of imagine what it sounds like. But it reminded me of kind of like a similar story from the Southwest United States, where in 2012, Lonnie Schwartz, a Border Patrol agent, shot Jose Antonio Alina Rodriguez, who he said threw a rock at him through the border wall. Jose was on the Nogales, Mexico side of the border wall and was just throwing rocks at the like 60-foot wall, you know, and Lonnie Schwartz shot at him 30 times through the wall. Schwartz was later acquitted of all charges and his family was blocked from suing him.
It's pretty cool that you can just kill people in other countries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's pretty, I can't even make this joke.
Okay.
So yeah, that is a story of one teen who was killed for playing with fireworks. Next, we're moving back to the United States, and I want to talk about Ryan Gaynor. Ryan Gaynor was a 15-year-old Black autistic teen living in Apple Valley, California. Ryan, this is the reports that I've read. Ryan was having a dispute with his family that turned destructive. Because people experiencing different realities, different needs, was having a destructive outburst. And a family member called 911 for help because they didn't know what to do for like someone having this experience of like a fairly mild thing turning into a destructive outburst. Police, instead of like, you know, psychiatric services or something, showed up, and within 30 seconds of the police showing up, they had shot Ryan 3 times. The officers say that when they found Ryan was wielding a garden hoe, and the officer ran from him and like shot him from while running from him or something. And family members who, you know, immediately were like, oh my God, wait, you shot my kid, had maybe been expecting officers to come and, or, you know, anyone to come and just like help them calm their son down.
Yeah.
And instead the police shot him within 30 seconds of being there.
This is why we don't call the cops. This and many other reasons, but yeah, it's a good, it's not a good reminder. It's a terrible reminder.
Yeah. It is a grim reminder, that like anyone who believes that calling 911 is like, will help someone, especially people experiencing either like a break in reality or just like having different communication needs, the police will not help you and they will most likely harm your loved one. And this is not me throwing any kind of blame on Ryan's family,
yeah,
but it is a grim reminder. The last person that I want to talk about is Nex Benedict.
This one hits real hard.
Yeah, it's a hard one. Nex Benedict was a 16-year-old non-binary Choctaw teen living in Owosso, Oklahoma. Nex loved nature, drawing, reading, and inventing new recipes. On February 17th, Nex was involved in a fight at school in a bathroom, and Nex was very badly beaten up by three older teens. And so much so that Nex had, like, you know, raccoon eyes, meaning like visible contusions around the eyes from head trauma from having like, mm-hmm. I'm actually not going to describe it. Nex, I believe, went to the hospital after that. And then the next day, Nex at home collapsed at home and was brought to the hospital and pronounced dead. And there's kind of these two waves of media around this. One was right when Nex died, and one was just within the last few days when a medical examiner ruled Nex's death a suicide because of a like blood toxicology report. And it's like the way that the media is kind of spinning this is like oh, Nex, like people are exacerbating what happened. Like, Nex wasn't beaten to death. Nex
was just beaten into suicide. That's totally different and better somehow.
Yeah. And it's like that's a lot of the media going around is like, it's like trying to like absolve blame from like the people who bullied and beat Nex up so badly that they killed themselves, or they took a lot of drugs and either meaning to or not.
Yeah.
Like,
and the lack of
died as a result,
you know, care and support. Like it was after Nex went home and talked to the family that the family took Nex to the hospital, the, you know, administration, the school, teachers, counselors, like, looked at what happened and didn't call in medical professionals to help at the school.
Yeah. And it kind of raises this point of like, you know, suicide amongst like in the queer community, that like, if people are living in such like desperate and violent measures that people are driven to self-harm or driven to like any of these things, whether intentional or non-intentional death, like that is the fault of society. And yeah, if you bully someone so badly that they self-harm and die as a result, you killed that person.
Yeah. And I don't know why I found this particular detail so disturbing, but I read that it was three teenage girls that had beat Nex in the bathroom, and I I don't know why the fact that it was girls that, you know, caused this, that was so, it was just like an extra layer for me. I guess, not expect, but when you talk about bullies and physical violence, maybe it's just from my own childhood or life experience, you expect that to come more from, you know, men, boys, like they're the ones trained to have more physical altercations. So the fact that it was three girls was just, I don't know. It's extra weird to me.
Yeah. This one hit especially hard for me, just being like someone who is like, you know, like I didn't know I was queer when I was a teen, but it seems pretty obvious now. And like the things that I was heavily bullied for were things that looking back, I'm like, oh yes, I was bullied because I was queer. Like this is pretty obvious to me. And it's like the amount of stress that you can experience from like the daily reminder and like daily fear of being bullied is horrifying. And yeah.
You know, there's someone else out there who's a real big bully and has a lot of power.
Oh God. Before we segue, I just want to wrap this into like, these are three very different and very similar stories at the same time of like, of teens who were killed for being Palestinian, for being autistic, for being queer. And like they all happened in the same month. And I don't know. I think obviously these are systemic problems and systemic and like individual and personal problems in our society of like people not knowing how to and being aggressive towards these identities. And I don't know. It's just bad. And some more bad things. I've been talking on the show for a little bit now about how Abbott has kind of turned Texas into like a little mini fief. Via these like testing of power with like the power of the Texas governor and the power of the federal government. And in the newest series of that, we have Texas SB 4. Texas SB 4 is a law that was passed last year, which would allow Texas law enforcement to detain, arrest, and prosecute suspected migrants. If this seems like what normally happens, the difference between this and what normally happens is that Border Patrol is the agency that arrests people, and this would allow any Texas law enforcement to detain suspected migrants, arrest them, and prosecute them under Texas law, not under federal law.
This is the like, now you can stop every brown person and check their papers law, right?
Yeah. Or sort of. Yeah.
Well, the like suspected migrant, I assumed, was specifically around some racial indicators.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's that one. And the sentences that people could have from it, for the first time, it would be a misdemeanor. And you could get 6 months. And for repeated prosecutions, it would be a felony carrying a maximum sentence of 20 years. And this is what's interesting is like this is the exact same sentencing procedure for Operation Streamline, which is the court that does this at a federal level. So it's like it is the same sentencing that already exists. This would just grant Texas the power to do it as a state rather than at a federal level. And it is specifically aimed at circumventing asylum procedure. So that like people who are presenting for asylum can just be arrested by Texas law enforcement and prosecuted for illegal entry instead of going into asylum proceedings. And that is one of the bigger deals about this bill. And it is a bill that passed, but the Supreme Court has put a pause on it. And that pause has been recently increased until like March 18th or something. But it seems like the Supreme Court is probably going to shut this law down. But
you all listeners know, and we don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. In another thing, law legislation aimed at migrants and people seeking asylum. The Castle Doctrine in Arizona is trying to be expanded. And this is around like, you know, home defense with HB 2843. And this bill would expand the Castle Doctrine to not only include the use of lethal force to protect your home, so someone from trying to break into your home, but for merely trespassing on land that you own.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. It doesn't suspend any like need for there to be like the presentation of like fear of your life, you know? It just kind of expands the area, and it's like caused this like thing, which I think is really indicative of like politics right now, which is politicians bickering with each other over like, I don't know how to say it, like schoolyard antics, where like the Republicans are like, Democrats are blowing this out of proportion and they're spreading misinformation that this law means that anyone can just shoot anyone for trespassing on their land. And that's going to get good people prosecuted for murder because Democrats are spreading misinformation about the harm of this bill.
Oh, okay. Because they're like, well, the good, I have a feeling that no good person will shoot someone just for being on their property. I have to admit that, like, I mean, I'm a gun rights supporter, right? And like, overall, like the concept of Castle Doctrine, I'm not inherently opposed to, and like stand your ground laws and all those things. Like, obviously they're used like every law in like, you know, horrible racist and classist ways. Mm-hmm. But I am like, you know, if I'm out walking my dog on my property and someone's like, well, I guess it gets so weird, right? Because then it's like, well, what's the difference? Because if I'm walking my dog anywhere and someone pulls a gun on me and tries to kill me, I'm allowed to shoot, unless it's his property or something, I guess. I am allowed to defend myself, right?
Yeah, exactly.
From threat of lethal force. And like, I guess it's like, no, it's just interesting. Because people shouldn't be able to shoot people just for being on their property, the same as you shouldn't be able to shoot someone just for taking your TV. But there's also like, it's fairly understandable that like, someone breaking into your house in the middle of the night can be perceived as a threat to your life. To me, the problem here is not the gun rights of the house owner. To me, the problem is the systemic poverty that has led someone to a life of stealing TVs. You know, and I don't know. I need to learn more about this one, and I'm sure it's being used in horrible ways and stuff, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's the problem. Yeah, because it's like, it's just an expansion of like protecting people who are defending themselves, you know?
Right.
And it's like the, in the goodest sense, in the goodest situation, it protects people. Mm-hmm. But the intent that it's being crafted for is to provide more protection for like ranchers and farmers to shoot migrants for trespassing.
No, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Property.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. that is the intent with which the bill is being explored.
No, I believe you. Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, that's all I've got.
Well, that means it's time for good news. Good news with Brooke.
Hey, are you two ready for some good news?
Ready for some good
news. To cleanse our palates and feel joy again?
I'm sure I'll come up with some way where the good news is not actually all that good.
Sunshine, whatever. You're our Pollyanna, Madam Positivity. Margaret, we look to you for hope.
Yep, okay, what do you got?
All right. Good things that have happened in, okay. So in February, the country of Greece legalized same-sex marriage.
They invented democracy.
Yay.
That's right. By a pretty good margin as well. Much more than a 2/3 majority. So.
Oh, that's cool.
That's wonderful. And then kind of related, although, well, maybe it's not, but it's like related in my mind because, you know, leftist stuff. But France became the first country in the world to put abortion rights into its constitution.
Okay, so
yeah.
So
that's good, though. You think that they probably did it because they like looked over across the ocean and were like, oh, God, we should probably enshrine this.
Right. Which it's been legal in the country since the 70s. But they, you know, putting it like into their constitution is the thing that's first. And I mean, you know, France has written and rewritten in their constitution more than once.
They're pretty prone to revolution traditionally.
Right. And like willing to fucking edit the constitution. Like what? We can do that?
Wait, you can decide that something wasn't a great idea and then change it? You're not beholden to things that happened?
I hate defending the U.S. legal system, but we have amendments. We have a system for this. It's happened a bunch of times.
I know, but
how dare you put me in the position of defending the U.S. government methodology?
Yeah, but we act as a society like it doesn't happen. Like, that's not thing we do. Like,
it's true. And there's that, like, word, like, necrocracy, like, rule by the dead. And and what's funny is you're like, ah, ha, 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 that's like a fantasy thing. We're a necrocracy. Like, we're ruled by laws made by dead people every single day. The Constitution was written by people who have been dead for a very long time.
Yeah.
Okay, I see you trying to ruin this good news, but you're not going to do it, Margaret.
Abortion I'm excited that France...
in France.
No, I have nothing negative to say about them enshrining abortion into their constitution. It's great.
That's great. So all the rest of the world, let's go ahead and follow suit there. Thanks, as a woman and a queer. Good news coming out of Europe. Another bill that France is working on, it passed half of its legislative body, they're working on trying to curb fast fashion, which I don't know if y'all are familiar with fast fashion.
Right. Oh, so, yeah.
You know, basically it is what it sounds like. And it's very wasteful and polluting. And the slightly sad part about it is that France is looking at doing this or working on it because they want to protect their high fashion industries from the influences of the fast fashion world. But as a fashion leader, like the choices that they're making here are, you know, have impacts on the fashion world in general. And it's, you know, it's an important statement to make too, and is ultimately good for the environment if they can move that forward and slow that trend.
That's good.
Yeah. It's always looking
that is actually the perfect song to sing in this, because that song is most famously sung by people who have nails through their hands attached to boards of wood and are going to die at the end of the life of Brian, when they're all being crucified. They sing "Always Look on the Bright Side of Life."
Bright side of life.
And it is not a visual medium, but the face that Inman is making right now is truly for the history books.
I've never seen Life of Brian, so I was like, "What the fuck are they talking about?"
Yeah, like one of the other crucified people is like, "You know, I just gotta think about it. Just think about it a different way," which is really just cognitive behavioral therapy in a nutshell, you know.
Oh my god! Go find a YouTube clip of that. It'll be your really highest bright side at the end of this episode.
All right. Anything else?
It's a jaunty little tune. Yeah, two more happy things in the world of
And then parenting. I got something to stick on at the end too.
Parenting, yeah, you do.
Yay.
Okay, Japan has a program for child care support that has existed for a while and prioritizes currently the children of working parents, but starting in April, they're expanding that program to a large portion of the country for childcare access for all, basically kids that are nice. Between 6 months and 2 years having free childcare options available. It's limited in the number of hours that people can get with free childcare, but it is open to working and non-working parents. And the long-term goal is to, over the next couple of years, actually roll that out to the whole country, and in the long term also expand the number of hours that people can access that. So as a parent who formerly had a small child and knowing what a nightmare childcare is, I am very happy to hear that they're working on this. Thank you. Thank you, Japan, for that program and for where you're going with it. And in broader news, just an overall fun note about millennial parents, specifically dads. Millennial dads doing a better job than previous generations in many ways, like changing more diapers than ever before, taking more paternity leave.
Doing the dishes without being explicitly asked to. That's a really major one, right?
I don't know about that. I was reading about parenting, but hey, if they're doing that, that's great. That's wonderful. And of course, the highest portion of stay-at-home male parents in modern history is amongst millennial. Wow. Amongst millennial parents. So millennial dads, thanks for stepping up and doing a good job. Yay, families.
Yay.
Okay. So Elon Musk has this gigafactory in Berlin. I'm going with something positive here.
I know, but then you said Elon Musk and it's just... But
bad things are about to happen to him.
Yeah, it's a cool thing.
Speaking of dads.
he's not a millennial. So... He acts like, no, he doesn't.
But his partners are, no.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Okay, so Elon Musk has this gigafactory 5 kilometers outside of Berlin in a forest. And it is for building Teslas. And people don't like it. And it builds most of the Teslas, more Teslas than anywhere else in Europe. And it people don't like it for a lot of reasons. One, Elon Musk is like at war against labor unions in Europe and like keeps running across that Europe actually has like some decent labor union culture. Built into it, right? And on March 5th, the entire gigafactory was shut down for several days by an arson that targeted its electrical grid substation. Basically, someone burned a electrical pylon that connected it to the grid. The arson was claimed by the eco-anarchist group Vulkangruppe, or Volcano Group, which has been doing eco-sabotage attacks since 2011. And their statement said, "Our fire stands against the lie of the green automobile." And it's funny because like most of the news articles are like, well, they must be confused because the automobile that's green is the green one. It's painted green. It has lithium batteries. Don't pay attention to where the lithium batteries come from. But people in Europe, more than in the US, there's obviously still a culture of cars there. But like more people are kind of aware that like actually you can get around with like trains and stuff really well, and that the idea of greening the automobile and that the way that we'll all get around is by having these individual multi-ton machines that take us places is not what's going to lead us into the future. Well, it is, but it's going to lead us into the bad future. But if we were imagining in a good future, it would not be built around cars. Whether or not it would have cars is a totally separate question, but it would not be built around it. So this stopped work for several days, this fire. But also, the next morning, the stock price of Tesla dropped 4.5%, which is an awful lot of financial damage. Elon Musk, like himself, like flew out there and then made like snarky comments on Twitter about like, "Oh, they're clearly mistaken because actually I care about the environment." And also, there's an occupation in the nearby forest that the Gigafactory is set to expand into. And you can read an interview with those people on crimefink.com. If you go there, you'll find a discussion around the Gigafactory and resistance to it. And I also just want to like kind of shout out that in the United States, or anyone listening to this, my like default advice to people when my friends are like, "I don't really know what to do with my life right now." Like, my like default advice isn't go back and try and get another degree or a degree at all. My advice is go to the forest and join a forest defense camp, because eco defense, when you do, I'm not talking about Volcano Group of stuff. I am talking about going and joining like tree sits and stuff. you join a community that needs volunteers, and you join a community where you become empowered to make decisions and advance a thing as part of a collective process. And it's like kind of an all-consuming thing. It's like actually hard to dabble in sometimes, right? Because often people just go and like live there. And there are a bunch of different action camps that I couldn't immediately come up with in the 10 minutes that it occurred to me right before we recorded that I should do this particular shout out that are happening across the U.S. at any given time. There's also, for example,
right now.
Hell yeah. And there's also a lot of resistance to the Mountain Valley Pipeline, the MVP. And a lot of people are like doing really amazing blockades where people are climbing into the pipelines. Inman's laughing. Did I get something wrong?
No, sorry. Just MVP. Most valuable.
Yeah.
Pipeline. Sorry.
No, it's okay. The other day on a different podcast, I said MVP. And then I was like, I think kids these days say goat. But then I didn't say that on the podcast because that would be embarrassing to say a kids these days thing. So I don't worry. I totally didn't say it now. Anyway, okay. So my other big piece of good news is something that I've been like watching happen. And it was like thinking, oh, I think this is happening. And then I read a news article that was like, yes, this is happening. Prepper culture has reached a tipping point. Like we did it, y'all. Like not us three, but like everyone listening, we did it. Prepper culture is no longer an overwhelmingly right-wing phenomenon. There's an article from Reuters, you know, fucking news.
Reuters.
And it says that the number of preppers has doubled since 2017. People who self-identify this way are like up to about 20 million people in the United States. And much of that growth is coming from marginalized communities and progressives and leftists. And so there's like, you know, it's obviously not like, oh, hooray, everyone is listening. If you're marginalized, you can go to the prepper thing and no one's going to be weird. Like, I can't promise you that, right? But I can promise you that there are other people who are experiencing similar marginalizations or have similar values as you. And for example, the subreddit r/preppers, so Reddit is not like where I immediately think like, oh, everyone here is going to be like, really not weird. Yeah. But that subreddit's great. I mean, it's not totally lined up with everything I specifically believe and, you know, whatever. But it talks extensively about community preparedness, and it often kind of makes fun of the people who are like, I can't wait to have my bunker full of beans and bullets or whatever, you know? And so that's my like final little good thing, is that compared to where when this podcast started, I was going to say 3 years ago, but it's been 4 years. I just lost track of time. I wouldn't have expected that to happen. And it is happening. And the number of people who have go bags and are like, you know, like my whole big thing is that if you're just starting, you should have a go bag. You should have about a 5 gallon container of water, depending on how many people you live with. You should have about a bucket of food that lasts a really long time, and then slowly kind of build out your pantry a little. The number of people who do that basic stuff has just gone up so much, and it makes such a massive difference. Okay, I have one more. It's the Margaret Rantz time of the podcast, apparently. I've been thinking a lot. I've been watching what's happening in a lot of places that are in more immediate crisis, like Gaza, right? I've been thinking about like all the journalists that have been killed. There's, you know, more journalists killed in Gaza than all of World War II or whatever the fuck the statistic is, right? And you reach the point where you're like, oh, you could just go through your whole life and be like, I'm a doctor and learn all these doctor skills, but then you don't even have a chance to use it, because if the crisis kills 80% or 20% or whatever of the people that you're around, it could kill you. And then you're like, oh, I spent all this time getting prepared and then I died. So what good does that do? Right. And that's when I realized individual preparedness almost isn't good for the individual. The thing that individual preparedness is good for is community preparedness. Because, you know, a lot of people, they're like, well, I don't want to get prepared because if I fill my house full of beans and bullets and then the world ends and I'm alone, I don't really care. And that sucks. And I don't really want to go on anyway. Or, you know, oh, well, I'm just going to die when the nuclear blast hits or whatever it is. Right. But when we think to ourselves, I am part of a community. So me having basic medical skills means that if everyone is doing that, everyone is individually prepping, and I am hurt, someone around me is going to have basic medical skills. And so by getting myself individually prepared, I don't know, I don't quite know how to frame all of this yet, but this has been this kind of epiphany where I've been like, oh, this is why individual preparedness doesn't make sense to people, is because it's not good for the individual. So if you're hating on individual preparedness, it's because you're secretly being individualistic. And the best thing that you can do for the community is get your shit together. And that's my final rant note for the month.
Okay.
Do you want to hear a really cool little story about some people who got their shit together?
Yeah.
And they built a house out of community
brick instead of straw, but they didn't let their friends get eaten by the big bad wolf because they all actually hung out in the brick house because they're like, yo, a wolf's coming. And the guy wasn't like, well, you got to stay in the fucking house that's made out of Oh, you're telling the story and then I'm ranting. Please continue.
No. I loved it. A proverbial tale. So I challenged everyone to come up with a good thing because I think we should be talking about cool things that happened too, instead of all the doom and gloom. Mm-hmm. And then I failed to find a cool thing that happened over the last month. Not because a cool thing didn't happen, but because I just couldn't find something that spoke to me. But I did come across this little blurb about this really amazing group that I didn't know about. And it feels very, very relevant to stuff we talk about on the show. Have y'all ever heard of the chrysanthemum flower? Mm-hmm. Like the group?
No.
Not the flower.
Wait, it sounds familiar, but no. Let's just go with no.
Yeah. So the chrysanthemum flower was a secret feminist organization in Palestine that resisted Israeli occupation in Jaffa before the 1948 Nakba. The organization was started as a community mutual aid group, which was formed by two sisters, Mohiba and Nariman Kushid. And what they did was they started this secret feminist organization whose goal was to organize their community. They bought weapons and relief supplies for their community.
Hell yeah.
It transformed into an armed organization when Mohiba watched a child get killed by a British sniper. And she's quoted as saying, "That day I returned home and decided to take revenge." Nariman at one point led an attack at night where after, you know, a lot of the male squadrons were like, no, don't go do this attack. She was like, we're going to do this fucking attack. And she led an attack where they rolled up on this Israeli Zionist force squadron, and she shot the commander, killed him with one shot. And then the entire squadron just threw down their weapons and surrendered to this, like,
hell yeah,
to this group of armed women.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's so fucking cool. The chrysanthemum flower defended Jaffa when it was being invaded. And the group unfortunately ended when the city fell and the ethnic cleansing of that part of Palestine began. Mohiba was literally driven to the sea. But she eventually escaped to Egypt, where she settled and returned to teaching. And she died of natural causes in 2000.
Hell yeah.
And yeah. A shout out to the chrysanthemum flower for preparing their community for devastation. And yeah, I don't know. Everyone go out and do that.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
And shout Wolverines while you do it, because the real Red Dawn was an Nakba. Well, that about does it for this month in the apocalypse. Catch us next month when we talk about the apocalypse. And in the meantime, catch us every week where we talk about how to live with the apocalypse with all of our usual content. And If you want to support this podcast, you can do it by supporting Strangers in a Tangled Wilderness, which is our publisher. We put out a bunch of different stuff, including a bunch of other podcasts, including a podcast called Strangers in a Tangled Wilderness. It comes out once a month and includes our featured zine that we put up on our Patreon, as well as The Spectacle. It used to be called Anarcho Geek Power Hour, but then people were like, but The Spectacle's better. And then it changed because that's the kind of... Because we didn't even have to amend our constitution to do it. You like that callback I just did there? And if you well like done. Nerd stuff and dislike the constabulary, then it's possible that The Spectacle is for you. And you can support us on Patreon. You can support us on patreon.com/strangersintangledwilderness. We pay our transcribers and we pay our audio engineers. And we all hold out the long-held dream of getting paid as hosts, but we're not there yet. But your support makes so much possible. And if you don't have any money to support us there, just don't. That's fine. Just keep listening to our shit. Tell people about it or don't. Do whatever you want. But in particular, we would like to thank Amber and Ephemeral and Appalachian Liberation Library, Portland's Hedron Hackerspace, Boldfield, E, Patuli, Eric, Buck, Julia, Catgut, Marm, Carson, Lord Harkin, Trickster, Princess Miranda, Ben Ben, Anonymous, Funder, Janice and Odell, Ali, Paparuna, Milica, Boise Mutual Aid, Theo, Hunter, SJ, Paige, Nicole, David, Dana, Chelsea, Starro, Jennifer, Kirk, Chris, Micaiah, and the immortal, the deity, Hoss the dog. That's it. And hope you all are doing as well as you can with everything that's happening.
Bye.